The right to life is enshrined in our national birth certificate, the Declaration of Independence. But abortion, often touted in the name of choice, significantly undermines the right to life. Eric Scheidler is the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League. He recently co-wrote an article on abortion in the publicdiscourse.com in which he and his co-authors argue that there may be common ground between those who are pro-life and those who claim to be pro-choice. Quote, says the article, we should all be able to come together to stop unwanted abortion. Only about one-third of women reflecting on their abortions describe the experience as a truly free choice that had a positive impact on their lives. For the rest, those abortions were not in line with their values, were consciously unwanted, or were even coerced, end quote. Well, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Eric Scheidler joins us now on Vocal Point. Eric, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you, especially to discuss such an important issue.
Sure. So go ahead and lay the table for us. You're saying that only about one-third of those polled who actually had abortion said, hey, this was a good thing and I like it. They weren't, one-third were shouting their abortion, so to speak, but the other two-thirds were not. They were bemoaning it, it seems.
That's right. And this is important new research for us to dig down into, because we are only at the beginning of understanding, when they look back on it, how women really felt about their abortions and what was really going on there. But preliminary research is showing us that as many as two-thirds of abortions are actually unwanted in some way by the woman who gets them. And this provides an incredible opportunity for common ground. You know, we were just out on the street, the Pro-Life Action League, showing the reality of abortion, and people are shouting the slogan, my body, my choice, to which we say, yeah, is it really the choice, though? If women were truly making a free choice to have abortions, we'd see about two-thirds of abortions completely disappear, if only there was some other help for them. The most shocking thing about this new research that I can't get out of my mind is that 6 out of 10 women, looking back on the abortions that they had, these are women in their 40s, say that if they had been given moral support or financial support, they would have kept that baby. 60% just needed some support, and they would have gone ahead and parented that baby. That should be a wake-up call for pro-life people and also for pro-choice people, because the choice that they think they're supporting is very rarely a truly free choice.
Well, one of the persons that you quote in the article said this. This is a woman who had an abortion. Quote, I remember that night in bed, my partner told me he didn't want to keep the baby, and I've never felt so much heartbreak in my entire life. End quote. Your comments.
Yeah, when you go to the pro-abortion movement's own website, shoutyourabortion.com, you get these stories from women who are just being honest. Very few of the stories on that website are actually shouting the abortion and being really proud and supportive of it. So often there is incredible heartbreak behind these stories, and we want to share that with pro-choice people, because when they see that abortion is rarely a truly free choice, they're going to be more open to listening to our message about the value of life in the womb, about the way we need to help mothers, about how we need to love both the mother and the baby and not cast either one of them out of our concern.
I'm going to quote another one of these testimonials. She said, I wrote how sorry I was for not being ready for them. I wrote about the kind of life I felt they deserved. I asked them to please come back to me one day. I held my baby and cried harder than I've ever cried before. So presumably this is one who was going to have twins and then instead ended up feeling coerced to have abortion.
Yeah, there are so many of these stories. And when you scratch the surface of abortion and get women to really talk about what the experience was like, especially in minority communities, you hear these kinds of stories. And that's part of the issue here that's so often overlooked. People think that, minority women need abortion because they're maybe a little more economically disadvantaged. Well, part of the truth is that minorities are far more pro-life in their attitudes. When we survey them, we find out that those with lower economic incomes, those who are, outside of the mainstream, white middle class culture in some way, are actually way, way more anti-abortion they still have more abortions. And so that means that the sorrow, the misery, the shame, the guilt for abortion is falling on their communities. So again, and it's another area where, you know, the average person thinks, well, you know, poor black women need abortions. Well, it's hurting poor black women more than it's hurting rich white women to get those abortions.
And here's one last one I want to read. He said he had no attachment whatsoever to the pregnancy, saw it only as a problem needing to be dealt with. He was certain carrying this baby to term was the wrong choice. I was devastated. I cried for days and agonized over my decision. Again, that is somebody who had an abortion and deeply regretted it. And you're saying that these testimonies, I've just read the three different ones, they came from a website that supposedly was celebrating women having abortions?
That's right. Shout Your Abortion is this project that's supposed to be making abortion destigmatized. But if you drill down into it, you find incredibly sorrowful stories here. And this one is typical. We know that if the man is pushing for the abortion, the woman is almost always going to get it. If the man supports parenting the child or placing the child for adoption, they almost never go through with the abortion. So the reality is that men are the ones making the abortion decision most of the time. The idea that it's a woman's choice is just not true. Yeah, it's true in about a third of cases, maybe. But in two-thirds of the cases, that's not what's happening. It's very often the man who's pushing the woman towards an abortion she desperately doesn't want. And that's the story that you read over and over and over again at Shout My Abortion or ShoutYourAbortion.com.
Well, who is for abortion? You said earlier the men, but who else? I mean, obviously, for example, lately it seems that if you're a politician, if you're going to be pro-abortion rights, you're probably, perhaps, at least in some quarters, you're going to be getting certainly more money and you're going to be getting more support and maybe even more votes. I used to think that being pro-life was the better way to go politically. I'm not sure that that's true. I think being pro-life is the better way to go morally, and I'd rather go that way, period, end of story, because abortion is wrong. But I want your thoughts on this because, you know, it seems like the landscape has changed in the last couple of years.
Well, and the landscape has shifted and it's still shifting, and it seems a lot depends on how you position yourself as a politician on the issue. Politicians who are pushing for policies that are more in line with the American people, you know, limits on abortion, taxpayer funding limits, gestational limits, limits on aborting disabled babies. We get the American people to support us when we talk about it that way. But when the other side can position the pro-life guys as the extremists who want to ban abortion and harm women, then it becomes a lot more difficult. The problem is we've got, you know, sort of marginally pro-life politicians, most of them Republicans, a few Democrats, who are afraid to talk about the issue because they think that they're going to lose no matter what. They just don't understand how to talk about it. If you talk about the extremism of the Democrats and the extremism of the pro-abortion industry, we win over the American people. But you have to learn how to talk about it that way, and a lot of politicians don't. I guess another one that you'd say is, you know, pro-abortion would be the abortion industry. They are pushing abortion very hard because it brings them profits, and they often position themselves as the advocates for women getting abortions, you know, in these court cases, at the same time as they're the ones selling them the abortions. So there's a conflict of interest there that can make it really difficult for us to break through.
Sometimes the phrase is used that, oh, abortion is healthcare for women. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, healthcare doesn't involve killing a person. You know, death is never a diagnosis or a treatment for a diagnosis. So it's perfect nonsense that abortion would be considered healthcare. What's healthy is to carry pregnancy to term. Fertility and pregnancy are both signs of good health. It's a real coup that the pro-abortion side has managed to wrap a lot of this up in medical, sort of the garb of medicine, because people are willing to defer to the judgment of physicians and doctors. But physicians and doctors can tell us how to kill a baby, but they can't tell us whether or not it's the right thing to do any better than anybody else can. They don't have the special scientific knowledge about, you know, when a human life has value. That is not a scientific question. So we should be looking to you know, our own values to determine the answer to that question, not to the quote-unquote experts.
So, Eric, what do you say when people accuse you and other pro-lifers as, oh, you only care about, you know, the fetus until the baby's born, and then that's it. You don't even care at all. Your thoughts?
Well, I point to the evidence of what we're doing. I mean, right after the Dobbs decision came down, I co-authored a piece called, you know, It's Time for the Pro-Life Movement to Embrace Bold New Pro-Family Policies, which you can find at postrowfuture.com. And that statement at postrowfuture.com is calling on the pro-life movement to help women and families all along the way with housing, with health care, with prenatal child support, with putting pressure on the father to be involved financially and personally with his children. There's so much that we can do and that we are trying to do. When someone on the pro-abortion side says you guys don't care after a baby's born, they're just lying, or they're passing on, you know, misinformation that has never been true and is especially untrue now, where every pro-life measure that's passed, every abortion limit carries with it support for moms. And more pro-life states are doing this. Those who have passed abortion limits are helping moms.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think about these crisis pregnancy centers, which are really doing a lot of good stuff for these women. And yet the left is calling some of these centers harmful, deceitful, and so in some cases, in some of the blue states, they're even trying to shut them down as essentially being deceptive in their business practices.
Now, fortunately, we've been able to fight this off. I mean, in the state of Illinois, there was an attempt to force all of our pregnancy centers to offer abortion referrals, and we were able to defeat that in federal court. So thankfully, we have robust protections for our civil rights as pro-life activists right now. But it's only because we've remained extremely vigilant about this. City of Chicago just passed a quiet zone around one abortion clinic, which we will be fighting in court. I believe we will prevail and have that struck down. But it takes constant vigilance to keep these rights because at the end of the day, they want to shut us down because we're bad for business. We take away their profits. We make it harder for them to lie to women about what abortion really is. We're offering help to those women, and they want to stop us.
When you talk about trying to find common ground with those who really care about the women in this issue, obviously there are some people who are just so committed to abortion. I don't think you'll be able to find common ground, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be that, 10 to 20% who are extremely hardcore. They don't believe that abortion is ever a problem, that we should have the slightest concern for the fate of unborn children, that the fetus or the embryo is basically just meat, doesn't mean a thing. We're not bothering with those people. They're not going to be changed by us. Maybe the Holy Spirit can reach them in some way. We are going for the mushy middle, people who are uncomfortable with abortion, who don't want to call themselves pro-choice or pro-life, they're kind of stuck. If we can show them how often abortion is not really a free choice, that behind the majority of abortions, there is a sorrowful story where a woman wanted something else, and we failed her because we didn't provide that option to her one way or another, that support for abortion begins to break down. And that's really what we're trying to do with this, is to reach the average person who hasn't hardened their heart so much.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds left, and let me give your website. It is prolifeaction.org. How about a closing thought on abortion pills, since that now represents about 53% of the abortions? Eric Scheidler.
Well, the abortion pill is incredibly harmful. One of the saddest things about it is that the woman is left with a body that she has to bury somehow or flush down the toilet or do something with. We have excellent materials at prolifeaction.org about the abortion pill, including a flyer, The Abortion Pill, What You Need to Know. Order a stack of those, pass them around your community, put them in the back of your church so that people will find out the truth, the horrifying truth of the abortion pill.
Okay, Eric Scheidler, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for all this great information. All the best.
Glad to be with you.